Hi, and welcome to Frothy, home with the fun, frivolous, low-bar froth that your group chat excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all of the nonsense in between. And you're joined by me, Elle, a London-based 27-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, your parents, your partner, whoever, questions why you enjoy so much. Each week, we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. You guys, hello, how are we all? Good morning. It is incredibly early for me. I messed up my recording schedule, so we are once again recording at a really random time. It's not quite 7 a.m. just yet, but I have had a lot of coffee, and I'm hoping that that will, you know, save us for this. But it has been a busy, kind of random, very silly week. And therefore, there are things to talk about. I think first, we of course have to just pay reference to the wicked madness that is still ongoing this week, despite the fact the movie is now out in cinemas. If you saw the memes around holding space for defying gravity, and they mean nothing to you, I mean, absolutely fair enough, because it's a nonsense sentence. But it pays reference to an interview around the film, so a promo interview in the lead up to the release, where one interviewer let Cynthia know that people online were really holding space for Defying Gravity, the song. And no one's quite sure what that means, but everyone is now holding space and the memes have been endless. So, you know, if that's what you see around, that's what it means. It's just silly nonsense, if we're going to be entirely honest. But it made her happy, so I guess that's all that matters. And then, of course, Greenwich in London was rebranded to Greenwich. And I won't lie, I totally missed this until a colleague on Friday asked me if I'd seen anything about it. And I hadn't, so that makes me awful at this job. But I have now caught up, and it just seems that Cynthia went and turned some lights on, obviously some green lights in Greenwich. And the borough has been renamed. I think Greenwich University is also rebranded to Greenwich University for 2 weeks. I mean, this is obviously all a PR stunt. I highly doubt they've changed anything, you know, on their tax forms or business accounts. But fun nonetheless, although pointless, I'm not sure. I think sometimes PR is just for fun, if we're going to be entirely honest. When it's something of this scale, I think people are definitely aware of the film, but we've got some capacity, some budget, some leftover space, whatever you want to call it, to have some more fun with it, so let's do it. And I think this is one of those examples. But aside from that, there is a lot more to talk about, so we have to dive right in with the best of the brain rots, the silly stories that got us talking this week. Up first, a really interesting topic, and one I will be honest, I've not given any thought to prior to this week, and I definitely should have been. I definitely should have paid a little bit more attention, but I don't think I'm the only one in this camp, and that is somewhat reassuring. But this is, of course, the conversations and the upset and the questions around Band-Aid and its song, Do They Know It's Christmas? The song was first released in 1984 by a whole bunch of artists with the goal of raising money for the famine in Ethiopia. It was then re-released in 2014, so 30 years after the original release, and this was for the Ebola crisis in West Africa. And this is the one that you'll probably remember that had a load of famous faces, so Chris Martin, Bono, Sam Smith, Rita Ora, really randomly, Zoe and Alfie Sugg, YouTubers, British YouTubers, who, I mean, I think Zoe can carry a tune. I vaguely remember that from her, like, Day in the Life vlogs. But I have no idea about Joe, and I am confused as anything as to why they were there. Whether or not it was just an attempt to grow an audience, I have no idea. But I remember being confused at the time, still confused. But anyway, they were there. And then, of course, Band-Aid are re-releasing this song for 2024, this has been titled an ultimate mix, which apparently means they're taking sort of several different versions of the song and then laying them on top of each other, so you get a different mix of voices, but I suspect it will sound incredibly similar, and I don't think they're changing any of the lyrics. They're not reinventing the wheel with this, they're just sort of slightly repackaging it. And that aside, I can't really tell you any more about the song itself. I couldn't even tell you what they're raising money for, whether or not it's just Band-Aid in general, or aid for a particular cause, or aid for Africa as a whole. I have no idea. Instead, the whole conversation has been fully taken up by Ed Sheeran, who was on the 2014 track, and has come out on Instagram and said that nobody asked him whether or not they could reuse his vocals, and that if he had been asked, he would have said no, because he, for the most part, I think, is a little more educated around what the lyrics are saying and the potential damage of Do They Know It's Christmas? Because of the white saviour element the song presents, and also the really damaging stereotypes about Africa. He supported this by resharing a statement from Fuse ODG. He's a Ghanaian British musician, and he said, and I'm quoting here, that the campaign was dehumanising Africans and destroying their pride and identity in the name of charity. Very powerful words and a really strong stance. And Ed coming out about this has obviously upset the 1984 group, the 2014 group, anyone and everyone involved in Band Aid who still believes that what it's doing is helpful and beneficial. We've had Tony Hadley come out and speak to BBC Radio 2. He was on the original 1984 single, and he said that he thought critics like Ed Sheeran should shut up if he was going to be entirely honest. So, pulling no punches. And then, of course, we had Bob Geldof, who wrote the song originally and has come out and completely disagreed with Ed Sheeran and said that it's not harmful, it's in fact kept millions of people alive. Bob Geldof goes on to say, "Why would Band Aid scrap feeding thousands of children dependent on us for a meal? Why not keep doing that? Because of an abstract wealthy world argument, regardless of its legitimacy. No abstract theory, regardless of how sincerely held, should impede or distract from that hideous, concrete, real world reality. There are 600 million hungry people in the world. 300 million of them are in Africa." And I can see both sides of the coin. The charity Band Aid, I have no doubt, are doing incredibly important work. I think any charity that is able to feed hungry people, it's factually incorrect to say they're not doing good work. That being said, I'm not surprised about Ed Sheeran and his decision to make it really clear he is not affiliated with this version. We know from Ed and everything he does that he has a really clear, strong sense of self, and he doesn't let that get in the way of his career or anything, really. If you think about it, you know, he dresses in a very particular way that suits him. The way he writes, produces, promotes his music is very independent of trends or anything of the sort. And I think we see that really clearly with his most recent album, which I don't think I've heard a single song from, and it's been out well over a year. I just, you know, it was a bit of a flop in some ways, but that didn't matter because that's how he wanted to write, produce and promote it. It's how he did it. And, you know, so he's never let anything get in his way. And I think that if he had been not better educated, but more aware of the conversation around Band Aid in 2014, he probably would have again said, no, I'm good. I don't need to be involved in that. And I don't think he would have worried at all about whether or not that would have impacted his career whatsoever, because he very much gives the impression as one of several artists, really, who have values stronger or as integral to their career as anything else and any other opportunity. And I think he would have then joined the likes of Fuse ODG, who apparently was invited in 2014 to join the band, but refused because, for him, the stereotypes and the harm that comes from them was far greater than the help of feeding these people. And while it's a hugely interesting conversation, I don't see it impacting anyone's career involved or the success of this new Band Aid 40 song. I'm always curious about the re-release of songs, Taylor Swift aside, and whether or not they get anywhere near the original hype. For me, I don't think so. I think it can be akin to flogging a dead horse. Historically, charity songs have done incredibly well in the UK around Christmas time. I don't remember if last year, but certainly in the run of recent years, the top number one song in the charts around Christmas time has always been a charity song. Often by Lad Baby, who is a father and content creator who makes a lot of content around the cost of parenthood and how to cut costs with children, often sort of with a comedic element to him. Again, I don't know what they're raising funds for, simply because this conversation has dominated. And while I'm sure Ed is relieved that he has made his point of view clear on the matter, I don't see it changing how people see him, how people see Fuse ODG, or how even people see Bob Geldof. I think everyone kind of understands here that everyone is doing what they view as right, and that's all we can ask for anybody. And maybe that's me being optimistic and in the festive mood, but let me know what you think. Has anybody caused any reputational damage here? Or is this a bit of a flash in the pan conversation that in a couple of weeks' time we'll have forgotten about, when Do They Know It's Christmas is playing alongside every other Christmas song we know on the radio, and it just kind of blurs into the merry fun of all of them. Something a little bit silly, and that is Joe Lycett was a guest on Josh Widdicombe and Rob Beckett's podcast Parenting Hell, which if you have not listened to before, that's absolutely fair enough. I had never listened to it prior to this. When I saw that he was a guest, I had to stop and listen. And basically, it seems to be in a podcast created during lockdown when the pair were struggling with sort of having to be parent, teacher, socializer, all sorts to their kids when, you know, schools weren't open and everyone was stuck inside the house. And it was really, really interesting. Joe Lycett, of course, announced that he'd had a baby last month with his long-term partner, Denise. Her name is not actually Denise. It seems to be that she doesn't want to be in the public eye and maybe can't be due to her job. And so she has been fondly nicknamed Denise by Joe simply because she doesn't like the name, which I think screams loving long-term relationship. But announced kind of out of the blue, I don't think anyone really knew that he was dating anybody. And I think there is also the slight assumption that he is gay because of maybe how he presents, how he acts, the jokes he makes, and people's own, I think, internalized assumptions. He is not gay. He's both come out and said he's pansexual and bisexual. During the podcast interview, he did say he was bi, so I'm going to go ahead and stick with that label. So a real surprise, I think lots of people thought at first that he was making some sort of joke. He is known as a bit of a practical joker. Off the top of my head, the example I can think of is his statement that he was going to shred £10,000 if David Beckham didn't pull out of the most recent World Cup, which was obviously taking place in Qatar, a place that has just awful human rights. David Beckham didn't pull out, and so Joe did shred the money, but I believe it was fake money, and he then donated the money to charity. I'm not quite sure. Either way, it was always going to work out with making him look good, raising awareness, and making David Beckham look not so great. So success there, tick, tick, tick. But yeah, he was on the podcast, and I loved it, you guys. I wasn't expecting to, but it made me realise that I am not often aware of or involved in or even sort of thinking about the conversations between dads, which I know sounds really silly, but I am a woman and so much of the content I consume is created by women for women. And so even if it is on the subject of parenthood, it's on the mum's side of parenthood, whether or not it's trying to get pregnant, the pregnancy, giving birth, and then being that child's sole caregiver for however long that may be. And so that is the side of parenthood that I see, that I've been educated on, that I engage with. And I had given like no real thought, I think, or no proper thought to fatherhood in the same level of detail that I know motherhood as someone who's never had a child. And to hear three dads talk about it together was incredibly interesting. And so if you're like me and that's not really on your radar, or it's not sort of content you're actively seeking out, I would definitely recommend, because my mind was blown a little. And there, you know, talks about how sometimes fathers can sort of feel like they bring this child into the world and then they're replaced by this child because of how much newborns maybe need their mothers at first, was just mind-blowing and a little sort of not upsetting, but I think, you know, they talked really honestly and openly and with like quite a lot of emotion, and no one held back, and I really loved it. And then of course there's like the funny side of it, because they are three comedians and that is kind of what people expect. And so Joe then talked about how he was doing the night feeds, and that meant that he'd got really into American basketball because of the time difference, and it meant that he could watch it in the middle of the night. And I don't know, I loved it. I was really surprised by it all, incredibly interested, and surprised by how much I enjoyed it, but not surprised by the fact that Joe did come out and say that he hadn't wanted to share at first that he'd just become a father, and that he was, and he phrased it as encouraged to do so by the British press, who I suspect had sort of suggested that if he didn't come out and say it, that they were going to be leaking it. And so obviously he took control of that narrative again by posting on Instagram and letting the world know before he was ready to. He apparently wanted to share the news with fans through some sort of stand-up, although hadn't really given much thought into how he was going to write that stand-up or how, you know, that storyline within the stand-up joke was going to take place. What I did kind of love is that apparently lots of people did think that the announcement was a joke, partly apparently because the photo he posted, he's not holding the baby's head correctly and the baby looks a bit like a potato, which I think is a little rude, but also I kind of get it. You know, the baby's identity has been completely hidden. It's it's just the back of his head. And I don't know, I really just feel that this will have, in some ways, completely changed his public persona, but in other ways, unlike a female comedian, it won't have changed anything about him whatsoever. You know, you think of Katherine Ryan, who, while yes, had much more public pregnancies and shares her children online, all of this and all of that, but a mother or being a mother is very much a part of her public identity and persona and something that she is known for. Obviously, partly because that is how she has decided to direct her image, but also I think because it's still so tied to how we understand women and how we perceive women in the public eye. Whereas I think for Joe, yes, he's been forced into this. And yes, I think for some fans, this will be an interesting point. Or for those on the periphery who weren't sure whether or not they loved his content or not, will maybe be more interested in what he has to say in his next stand-up routine, in case there is reference to this. I think for the most part, this hasn't really impacted anything because we still put so much distance between fatherhood or parenthood and men, even when they go on podcasts like Parenting Hell and share their story. And now we've got Popped a Pin, which is something that I've shallow dived this week, but I'm hoping to come back to because it has caught my eye. And as you requested, we're now going to start talking about last week's Popped a Pin before this week's Popped a Pin, simply because I was leaving you all hanging and you didn't enjoy that, and I'm very sorry for it. But last week, we talked about the rise in people smoking, or what looked to be the rise in people smoking because of how much sort of smoking imagery we were seeing in pop culture. And that, of course, led me to the article, Why Girls Love Fags, in The Spectator. And you guys, having now read this, it is so worth your time. It is so well written. Not a single word is wasted. Beautifully done. I really enjoyed it. And just found it fascinating. And I'm not sure if that's because I'm not a smoker. So I don't have any emotional or social ties to cigarettes or vapes or anything of the sort. And for the most part, none of my friends are really smokers either. So a really sort of slightly alien concept to me. And I'm fascinated by this piece. I have no idea how old the author Kate Ferguson is. I think she's definitely older than myself because of how she talks about smoking, because of her reference to having a smoking spot in the sort of social area, the outdoor social area of her sixth form, which just absolutely was not a thing by the time I got to sixth form. And the way she talks about smoking is just utterly fascinating. And I think I totally understand the ties she's made between smoking and friendship, and obviously it's not the act of smoking itself, but it's sort of the camaraderie and it's the sort of sacred space that a smoking area is and all of that, which I found really fascinating. And I am tempted to say that actually I think coffee runs now with friends and colleagues, and maybe that replacement. I certainly feel that, you know, going out for a coffee out of the office with a colleague that maybe you're not as close with at first, I think it's the act of walking somewhere and then, you know, buying something and having something that's the same, but obviously different, because you can have a different coffee order, or you can have a different brand of cigarettes and all of this. And then having that space to just consume whatever it is you've bought, whether it is cigarettes or coffee or whatever it is. I think that does develop a sort of friendship away from whatever reason you met in the first place. And that can be quite sacred as well. So yeah, fascinating, really, really interesting. I think it took me all of like 7 minutes to read, if that, so worth your time for sure. And I just think Kate writes really beautifully, so keep an eye out for more of her work, I would say. That aside, something that caught my eye this week is a TikTok account which I have been following for a couple of weeks, maybe max, and simply because it looked like it was growing quickly, and it has proved itself right. It is growing incredibly quickly. It's called Hassel Official, and Hassel is spelled H-A-S-S-L. And the tagline is, tired of being harassed, we get it. At the time of recording, it's got over 134,000 followers. So big numbers, not mammoth, but definitely big, because it seems to have launched in about early November. So you're looking at sort of 25 days of content, and therefore a huge rise to fame, in my honest opinion. And its style is very much to post a quote or a stat around gender-based violence or gender-based harassment, alongside like a trending TikTok sound or an audio or a pop song that's very on theme. And Honestly, it seems to have completely sort of trashed the idea that infographics don't perform overly well on socials, if I'm going to be honest, because it's racking up likes, it's racking up attention, and as I said, it's growing in popularity. But that is all I know. I have not done any further deep diving on this. It's just something that caught my eye and that I thought would pop off and that has popped off. But that's all. So I'm going to give it sort of some further attention this week, and I will come back next week to let you know what the hell is going on over on TikTok, because I am curious. And then some recs for the week, and I absolutely have to recommend to you this article on The Cut titled, Are You a Cycle Breaker or Just a Grown Up? Which the title caught my eye immediately, so of course I clicked on, and I am so pleased I did, and I think it is so worth your time. And I realise I've just said that about last week's Popped a Pin, but I promise this is equally as fascinating. And it's this really interesting piece that talks about what I think we all see online, which is regular people making regular decisions and choices. But because it differs from that of their parents or their upbringing or of their friends, and I think we have to recognise that we live and work and socialise in slight bubbles here, but because of that difference from their, I guess, their normal or their perceived frame of reference around normal, they label it as cycle breaking and give themselves a bit of a pat on the back for it. When really, I think it's just them making decisions that make themselves happy, decisions that are independent of maybe social peer pressure, that whether or not has been properly labelled, I think they maybe feel. And I have seen it so much online. It's become a real cliche. It's become a real, like, poppy word. I can't really think of the way to describe it, but you see anything and everything as being labelled, especially on TikTok, I feel, as cycle breaking, when I think that's minimizing what cycle breaking is, and I think that's sort of really not quite paying the respect to what the people behind sort of coining the term cycle breaking meant when they were talking about things like generational trauma and abuse. You know, I do think things like, as they talked about in the article, living room families, where kids are allowed to put their toys in the living room as opposed to the playroom, is complete nonsense, if I'm going to be entirely honest. And I'm really sorry if that is you. I mean, I guess use whatever labels you identify with, but I just cannot believe we're calling that cycle breaking. I think that just plays such a disservice to what cycle breaking actually is. And I do think it sort of ties in, as I think the article kind of hinted at as well, of people online who post a lot but who want to be seen as relevant and interesting and as operating with a brain. You know, they want to be seen as aware of the home they're creating and of their children's needs and of putting those interests and those care responsibilities first, right? And to do that, you need to be sort of conscious of your actions and of how you were raised, and to then make decisions about what you're imparting onto your child. Fascinating article. It really sort of hit home with me, because I think it sort of shared a lot of what I feel about the current content around this, and I would definitely recommend giving it a read. You could of course completely disagree with me, and that's absolutely okay. Drop me a line if you do, because I'm always interested in hearing another opinion. But yeah, really, really sort of hit a note that I was feeling, and I think you'd enjoy it too. And then rec number two is not even half as academic or on time fulfilling or anything of the sort. And it's actually a drink recommendation. So this weekend I had a lot of socialising and a lot of driving and therefore was not drinking. And I tried for the first time an alcohol-free rosé from the company Naughty Rose, which I've looked up online, and I think they Naughty do other alcohol-free drinks, but I've only tried the rosé, and guys, can't recommend it enough. I loved it. It was sweeter than expected, so bear that in mind if you're not really a sweet tooth kind of person, but it was fabulous. It absolutely made me feel like I was joining in everyone else with a drink. It looked cute in its glass. It tasted pretty good. And you know what? It was like half the price. A glass was £6, which if you're looking at going out in Central, you're probably looking at more like, well, I think at least another maybe £4 for a glass of Prosecco. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's me just buying in the wrong places. But yeah, so I felt like I was saving money, having a good time, and also saving myself for the next day, which is always a positive. What I would say though is, having looked online, it seems that you can buy a full bottle for about £12. So the markup was huge, because there's no way they put a full bottle into my glass. But I'd really recommend, if you're looking to try a non-alcoholic drink while out, I thrived the next day and I didn't miss the alcohol whatsoever. That's all we've got time for this week, guys. So if you got this far, thank you so, so much. And if you like what you heard, please hit subscribe or follow or whatever the button is, so you're the first to know when next week's episode drops. And of course, if you think you know someone who might enjoy frothy as well, definitely give it a recommend. And yeah, have a lovely week. I hope you enjoyed the Monday upload. If not, we can always move back to Sundays. But I think Monday might suit everybody better. So let's see how we go. And until next week, see ya. I'm not afraid to